We are now only days away from the worldwide release of The Batman. To cap off our highlight of Matt Reeves' most recent works, we're headed back to the Planet of the Apes to discuss the final entry in this sci-fi blockbuster trilogy. Join us on this episode of Script or Screen as we go on one final mission with 2017's War for the Planet of the Apes.
Hello, ladies, gentlemen, apes, monkeys, everything in the world, anyone who's listening, if you're a dog and you're listening, if you're a cat, welcome to Script or Screen, your number one source for ape-adjacent Bible allegories. I am one of your hosts, Zach Strachman. Joined with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Chris Kitchen. Chris, how you doing today?
I personally am well.
That's good.
I'm not gonna lie, Zach, I'm actually not well.
No? Why? Is there something going on in the world?
It feels almost inappropriate to go and try to, you know, make laughs and jokes and provide great content and with such disparity going on. I can say is, you know, I feel very blessed to be where we are at in the world. I feel terrible about the things that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, yeah, I'm at a loss for words.
You are right on the money with all of that, Chris. There's a lot of bad stuff going on right now. We're going to try and keep things kind of light in this episode, not to take away from the real-life, dramatic, horrible things that are happening out in the world, but we don't want to do a disservice to it by talking about it in any manner that could be taken as disrespectful or anything like that. We're here to talk about movies. That's why we made this podcast.
We're movies, here to provide entertainment and to make, you know, to make important thoughts aware to all of our lovely listeners. We want to provide them with quality content, an escape, if you will, for them to enjoy and listen to in times of turmoil or even in times of prosperous progress, all these really lovely things. And we hope that you lovely listeners will appreciate another wonderful edition of Script or Screen.
Absolutely. Chris, we are, like I said in the cold open, like one of us said in the cold open, I don't know who Billy used, but we're days away from The Batman hitting theaters. I'm still not crazy excited for it, but I'm getting, you know, I'm seeing it Wednesday. We're recording this on a Sunday. And I'm you know, ready to enjoy my time there. I've seen a few clips that have been online with different actors, Robert Pattinson, obviously, John Turturro, Colin Farrell, where I'm like, okay.
I'm definitely, like, avoiding all the clips that I can pop up in my feed. I'm just like, I feel like this one I'm really going in with eyes that are fresh. In fact, I've only seen one clip. And I guess it's everybody can see these things, right? It's not a spoiler. And it's Batman punching Jim Gordon in the face.
Sweet.
And I'm like,
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler, I guess.
No, it's okay.
But it's like a trailer. It's an advertisement, you know? And so I'm like, oh, all right. Well, I want to stop watching everything else just because I don't know. Let's see where it goes. I am very excited, though. More so than I feel like I was before. I officially purchased my tickets as of today. Ooh. So I am prepared to watch the newest installment in,
I think,
the Caped Crusaders film appearances.
Yeah, I think kind of what you just said kind of speaks to our level of excitement or lack thereof with this. Like, you just bought your ticket about less than a week before you're seeing the film. And
I got decent seats, too. It's not like the theater was packed or crazy or anything like that. I'm like, huh.
But I know generally when we are very excited about a movie, we will have those tickets as early in advance as they go on sale. So yeah,
because you never know now. Now everybody gets tickets, and you know, remember with Spider-Man, blew them out of the water. Like I was super lucky to even find Spider-Man tickets at the time. I know, I feel like everybody was. Endgame did this. I feel like Star Wars even does this. Like just all these big franchises, they just do this to theaters. Like, and for, you know, for better or for worse, it's great that people are excited and stuff, but I'm just happy that, you know, the moviegoers as a whole just seem to like, okay, you know, this is going to be cool, but let's see how cool it'll be, you know?
Yeah, I definitely was like, I wonder when the tickets are going on sale, and you were like, they are on sale. And I said, oh, I should get on top of that.
You know what's weird? I don't know if you saw this, but there was an ad by AMC that they've already awarded the Batman their AMC Artisan Film, and they like reserve a film award, and they reserve this award for very specific films. Like the last film to receive it was The Joker, and I'm like, excuse me?
Okay. Don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah,
I mean, like, I'm not doubting this movie's going to be good. In fact,
like, if you're going to give it to art films, you're going to give it to the Joker and the Batman. Like, what the hell?
A little peculiar, but yeah. I you know, when the review embargo for this movie lifts, probably in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
But a lot of times they'll have their premiere and you'll get early social media reactions from it. And that's kind of like the first point where you can, with a lot of these blockbusters, especially ones where the studios kind of keep it close to the chest, you know, with they don't show their cards until the very last minute. So these social media reactions are like your first indication of, is it good? Is it bad? And I've been waiting to see those. I saw some early reactions, but they were on websites like We Got This Covered, comicbook.com, Screen Crush, where I'm like, I'm not saying those, you know, if you write for those websites, God bless you. But
you ain't no Vanity Fair. You ain't no Hollywood Reporter.
Collider. Yeah, so I am curious what the early reactions to this film are. I'm thinking it's going to be positive because I think Matt Reeves knows what he's doing. And I think it's going to be a cool spin on the character.
Can't be worse than Justice League.
I hope not.
I say can't be.
By the way, speaking of Justice League, have you seen... So, there's been some stuff with the Academy Awards in the news. They are foregoing showing, televising certain awards. There was... Let's see. Excuse me one second while
I wish I came more prepared with news this week. It's just all the news I've been watching is just not related to media.
Yeah.
It's difficult at times. But you know what's crazy? I feel like this year's like the Academy Awards, while I'm familiar with a lot of the nominations and everything that we've seen the last couple of weeks. And we've seen only a couple of the films and talked, I guess, namely like the Tragedy of Macbeth we talked on on the show. But I feel like I am doing a poor job of going and watching some of these films that are nominated. Like I know I really wanted to see The Power of the Dog on Netflix. There were a couple of other ones too that I just feel like this year all the streaming services have the nominated films this year, which is just. I guess what happens, the more and more they finance and distribute all these really great projects, making it more accessible rather than, I have to go to the theater and try to do this. Not that I don't go to the theater and watch these films, but it's just now it's almost 85% of them are these projects.
So the categories that they are, there's eight categories, I think eight, that are being moved to the front of the award ceremony and won't be televised. Documentary short, film editing, makeup and hairstyling, original score, production design, animated short, live action short, and sound, which was reduced from two awards. It used to be sound mixing, sound editing. Now it's just best sound, which I think is weird.
That's stupid. That is ridiculous. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
I am really kind of in... I don't like this because I realize that the average filmgoer, they don't care about the people behind the camera. They only care about the actors and maybe the directors and the writers if they're, you know, somewhat interested in that kind of stuff. But like, or if it's a big name like Spielberg or Tarantino or something like that, or Nolan, I don't know. I don't even think the average filmgoer could tell who Christopher Nolan... I don't think they could pick Christopher Nolan out of a lineup. but you know, when you know, films don't get made without editing,
right,
without a score, without production design, without sound. And I'm like, these are the people who make the film what it is, what you see.
You're really just telling all the artists behind these other parts of the production that, like, you don't care about them as much as you care about your SAG, you know, actors that are nominated.
It's crazy because it's like...
In the end, they're just going to have a problem with the unions, you know, like the Editors Guild, the just all these different IATSEs and things like that, because they make up, I want to say, almost 100% of the workforce, at least more than half of it. In Hollywood, at least,
it's such a
you know, outside of the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's such a double standard too, because production design and score are not included, but things like visual effects and best song are.
Yeah,
it's weird. I don't know. The other thing the Academy Awards is doing this year is they are doing not an award, but a segment for basically like the film moment of the year. And or basically they have put it to a vote via the internet, because everybody's most volatile echo chamber, where people can go online and vote for what they think was, like, the film or the film moment of the year. And, of course, the only discourse I've seen throughout the internet because of this is the Zack Snyder's Justice League, and you are a rotten piece of shit if you think otherwise. And that's what the discussion around it has become.
The Zack Snyder's Justice League, it came on 2021, didn't it?
Yeah.
What the hell?
God. And it's like, I almost want to be like, no, the fanboys don't need their own little special pat on the back. Like,
yeah. The last thing I need is for Zack Snyder to walk on stage and accept an Academy Award.
He can accept an Academy Award for something, but he has to earn it, not this participation trophy of a segment. Anyway, so yeah, the 93rd Academy Awards kind of seem like they're shaping up to be a giant turd, so I don't know how that's going to roll. I'm interested to see how it all plays out, though.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though. It's funny that you want to talk about that, because the film we are discussing today was nominated for an Academy Award. Did not win. But it was nominated for Best Visual Effects.
What did it lose to? Did it lose to Star Wars?
No, it was 2018. I can actually tell you in like 2 seconds if you'll give me, like I said, 2 seconds. It lost to Blade Runner 2049.
Ooh, you know.
It was up against Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Kong Skull Island, Star Wars The Last Jedi, and War for the Planet of the Apes. That means two films about monkeys were nominated the same year. Very interesting.
Yeah, you know what? Blade Runner 2049 had some pretty good special effects, but we'll talk about the special effects in this a little bit later. We're talking War for the Planet of the Apes. Let's do our stuff. You wanna give a little descriptione?
Let's do it. Thank you, Rotten Tomatoes, for providing me with this script. I will screen it for you. Caesar and his apes are forced into a deadly conflict with an army of humans led by a ruthless colonel. After the apes suffer unimaginable losses, Caesar wrestles with his darker instincts and begins his own mythic quest to avenge his kind. As the journey finally brings them face to face, Caesar and the Colonel are pitted against each other in an epic battle that will determine the fate of both their species and the future of their planet. Wow, that was a lot more than I feel like what actually happened in the film.
I mean, this is for better or worse, it encapsulates a lot. I think it kind of oversells like Caesar and the Colonel aren't like punching each other out in the rain.
Yeah, definitely not.
But anyway, let's dig in. War for the Planet of the Apes came out 2017, directed by Matt Reeves. That's why we're here. Written by Mark Bomback and Matt Reeves. So it's actually a smaller writing team than the previous movie. And I think that this movie definitely feels different in its writing than the previous film in a lot of ways. And that's, you know, probably why. produced by Peter Chernin, Dylan Clark, Rick Jaffa, and Amanda Silver. Cinematography by Michael Saracen. Edited by William Hoy and Stan Salfus. Music by Michael Giacchino. Like I said, he's coming back for the Batman. He's got some good musics in his repertoire. Distributed by 20th Century Fox, a runtime of 140 minutes, budget of $150 million, box office of $490.7 million. That is a hit.
Dude, you know what's funny? I feel like when you look at, what was it, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, how much, I feel like this one brought in less than Dawn did.
I believe it did.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, the budgets were... The budget was less than the last film, but the last film brought in $710 million. I feel like that's the average, though, for like the third in the trilogies. It's very rare that the third is like the biggest moneymaker. I think of like, you know, look at Star Wars recently. You know, The Rise of Skywalker did terribly in the box office compared to the first two films. Not terribly. I mean, obviously they made a lot of money, but like it was not... You know, the Force Awakens hit that they had where it was over $2 billion worldwide. And then The Last Jedi, I think, was just over $1 billion.
Just over $1 billion. I love the film industry.
Right. So... What,
sorry, you underperformed. You only got just over $1 billion.
You gotta think about costs, Zach. That's just revenue. We're not talking profit here.
What if instead... We made just a good movie. A good, you know, whatever. Crazy idea, I know. Let's talk about the cast. Andy Serkis, he's back. The man himself, the granddaddy of performance capture. He plays Caesar J. Caesar in this film. Woody Harrelson as Colonel, apparently, J. Wesley McCullough. Do they ever say his name?
You only see his last name on his uniform, actually. I noticed that during my watch, and I'm like, okay.
They never call him by name.
He's either Colonel or Kerna.
Okay. We have Karen Cannavale as Maurice, Terry Notary as Rocket, Steve Zahn as Bad Ape, Amaya Miller as Nova, Michael Adam Thwaite as Luca, Gabriel Chavarria as Preacher, Sarah Canning as Lake, Alex Panovic as Winter, and Toby Kebbell as Ghost Koba.
You know what's interesting? Adam Thwaite sounds like an element that you could mine. I thought
it was like when your friend Adam is going to do something dangerous and you don't want him to, and you say, Adam Thwaite!
Another great cast, you know. Yeah. Performance captures and actors alike.
They make and seeing a lot of the like, supporting kind of characters who didn't get a lot of stuff to do in the last film really step up in this film and become like true characters in their own right.
Yeah. And also an interesting thing is that, like, you'll notice already that there's not a lot of humans in this film.
No,
this film is more directed on the apes themselves.
I could name four humans in this movie. There's the colonel.
Military guy number two.
There's Preacher, there's Nova, and then there's the one soldier who's just always yelling at Donkey.
Yeah.
So, not a strong showing from humanity's side, but that's how it is these days. Uh-huh. Let's talk about the story. I like this story. Before my rewatch for this, I had seen this movie once, whereas I had seen Dawn of the Planet of the Apes several times because I love that movie. But this was only my second time watching this film, and I forgot how much I enjoyed this film.
Yeah. I had only seen it once as well, and I feel like this time around, a couple things hit me. And it's the fact that we have, like, this more intimate tale of the apes, I feel. We are also kind of confined to, like, their forms of communication.
Yeah.
I don't know if you noticed, but I feel like this film, it's longer, right? And its runtime is just 10 minutes longer than
right.
the last film. But because of the fact that, you know, the apes have to communicate in the way that they do,
mm-hmm.
it's due to the fact that, all right, we're looking at them more. So it's going to take a little while longer for them to talk, and then that adds to the runtime. Like, oh. And I feel like I felt that a couple times in this film. But I like the idea now that, like, it was just a lot more intimate with a lot of these characters, you know?
Yeah.
Caesar especially, obviously. But it takes a smaller turn than the last one. In a sense that
yes,
go ahead.
It's less bombastic than the last one in a lot of ways. There's none of I feel like the last film it had just these moments of just high emotional just explosions.
Yeah.
Whereas this one has its big emotional moments, but they're kind of like they're far apart
mm-hmm.
and. A lot of it is just kind of like a growing, slow burn tension.
Yeah. And also the fact that, like, we're now focused solely on maybe two, really closer to one, like, conflict and goal.
Yeah.
And we're introduced with it pretty early on, too, in the film, which I really like. That it's we're not between all these other forces of, like, what was the last one? We had, like, the
humans.
And even within the humans, there's, like, three different, like, stories within the humans, the people, that they were all kind of distracting. You had, like, the two different stories of, like, the monkeys between, Koba and Caesar. So this is all, everything's a little more streamlined in this.
Absolutely, yeah. It's very focused on the one story it's trying to tell. And I think, honestly, that helps really kind of, like, give this movie its own, like, its own vibe that's different from the other two.
We're going to use vibe to describe our...
its own funk.
Well, Zach, what do you think about these funky apes?
Well, I like them. I think they're great.
We get the return of Blue Eyes. Love Blue, this character.
Is he in 10 minutes of this film?
No, he's like in the first couple. That's probably the full spoilers, by the
way.
Yeah,
full spoilers for War for the Planet of the Apes.
But I like that in its introduction that we get one. We don't even get Blue Eyes in the very beginning. We get the really great. It's not like a crawl, but like opening text
mm-hmm.
that I think does a great job of establishing everything and highlighting the rise and dawn and war.
Right.
Like little pieces of text, but it's a good way to jump back into a franchise.
Yeah, especially, you know, when you're in the third movie, you want to refresh everyone's memory on where everyone stands.
Yeah.
But yeah, we really set up, you know, I think what's great about this film, and right from the get-go, is this film is like five different films all wrapped up into one. So
you're speaking from a form of from a place of like
genre-wise
genres. Okay.
Yeah. So where did I write my notes? I wrote my notes, and then I don't really keep track of where I put certain things. Give me 1 second. I think, yeah. So obviously, it starts out. It is a war story. It is, you know, apes and humans are fighting. But it then becomes a very deep character drama story. It's a road trip film. It's a revenge quest. Then by the end, it's a prison break story. Uh-huh. You know, it's got so many different phases that it goes through. That I think that kind of helps keep things fresh, keep things from stagnating a little too much. And it always gives our apes something interesting to be doing.
I like that we are introduced to the exploration of the current relationships between the apes themselves, between the apes and the humans, mm-hmm. and between the humans, apes, and the apes. You know,
yeah. Or
because now we have these, we have actually real soldiers versus just like, you know, these, you know, just human
survival
kind of colonies. These guys are like outfitted and equipped with military gear, but we notice that they now have help from other apes.
It's such a great reveal, especially because like they have the helmets that say like, you know, monkey killer, and like one guy has a helmet that says like bedtime for Bonzo, and you're like, okay, so they're
very reminiscent of like Vietnam and, yes. and all these other just kind of eras of, I don't know, filmmaking, so, and even yeah. just stories.
So when the gorillas show up next to him, you're kind of like, oh, it's a nice curveball of like, what is the status quo right now?
Yeah, but that relationship too, I feel like it just builds, is just a nice factor that wasn't explored either, you know? And because we get that added element, I feel like this film then kind of does a really good job of separating itself from the other two, to be honest. And then we add an even further addition once we add the relationship of the human character to the apes, which is Nova, this young mute girl, you know?
Yeah.
And her connection to the simian flu, and
yeah. how,
and now that's kind of relevant and important again, and not just like a throwaway line.
I talked about how in the last film, how I really appreciated they kept up a continuity between the films with the apes that we saw, but I love that this movie takes an element from the first one and circles it back around and says, hey, you know that thing, that simian flu from the first film that wiped a bunch of people out, and mm-hmm. then it didn't even factor into the second film. Well, we're bringing it back,
yeah.
and now it's like a major thing. And I love the way it plays out. I love the we're drip-fed information about it. We see Nova. She can't talk. She's got like kind of like, you know, some crusty blood stains on her nostrils and stuff.
Yeah.
And you don't really think about it too much. And then they meet the soldiers who got shot. And the one guy, he's still, like, hanging on to life. But he's got, like, lots of blood coming out of his nose. And he can't speak. And little by little, you start piecing together what's going on. Just some really solid storytelling. But going back to that beginning, I want to say this movie definitely, now that, you know, I was rewatching it and I was refreshing my memory on it, I was watching this and being like, you know what? This is shot really well. Like, the scene, the action is directed impeccably. And it gave me a lot of confidence for to see what Matt Reeves has in store for the Batman. Because I was watching this, like, certain scenes where I was just like, I loved the direction of it. I loved when they're in their cool new ape sanctuary under the waterfall or behind the waterfall, and they start seeing the lights going down the water as their home is being invaded, and Caesar slowly creeps out to the waterfall and, like, reaches through, and you can't see the rope hanging when he reaches through and he grabs onto it. And I'm like, that stuff is so good at building tension. And I'm like, if this is the kind of stuff we're going to see in the Batman, I'm game for it.
I can appreciate a shot that was even earlier than that, when you saw one of the apes riding the horses kind of, like, into the distance to try to, like, get everybody to come out. And then he kind of arrives to, like, this kind of cleared area with, like, all the smoke and fog in the forest. And you hear from the background, like, and then all these apes on horses just, like, emerge. And it's, like, this really great shot for scale as to, like, oh, reinforcements are here, you know? And it was at one of those points, I was like, wow, like, this, like, it looks great. But then also in the same scene, I just felt like there were some shots where I didn't feel like it looked as great as it did in Dawn. And I'll tell you what, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Any other close-up of the apes that we ever saw from that scene going forward looked fantastic, and I didn't pay any more mind to it. But it was just a little thing I hadn't noticed. Go ahead.
Where did you find that it was like in that like POV shot as like Caesar walks through the apes, or?
Well, you know what's funny, because that one I also feel like maybe there was like the composition of all the apes together, kind of like, you know, outreaching their hands and just those movements didn't all look impeccable. And then same thing when in that earlier battle scene, you at one point see these horses kind of ride across screen, but they're kind of doing it diagonally. At least the camera's making it seem like it is. Okay. And you can kind of, it just looks weird that like the background and the foreground, they don't look very, like the elements were composited as well. But that could just be my super sensitive, really finicky eyeballs, and maybe I'm just looking at nothing.
Keep in mind, it didn't win the Academy Award. No, I think it's good. There are points in this movie where the CGI is honestly like breathtaking. Like, yeah. And I'm talking like in the scene in the when they find Nova, when Maurice finds Nova, and it's just that close up on Maurice's face, and you see every little hair on his face.
Oh.
And it's just like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, there's no illusion here. Like, I'm just looking at a real flesh and blood creature.
For me, it's when Caesar cries. Because he cries a couple times throughout this film. But
he goes through a lot in this film.
He does. But, like, there's the redness in his eyes, like, and the shadows as well. And then when you see, like, the tears emerge, like, that is when I'm like, wow, like, this just looks amazing. Like, photorealistic, if not more so than photorealistic. What's more so than photorealistic, Zach?
Realistic? Just real. we'll talk a little bit about him in a minute, but Steve Zahn's Bad Ape, there's a lot of points with the motion capture, especially in the face of Bad Ape. It's like, it's so fluid. It's so just, it looks so good. And the other one I was going to bring up was just when you see, we were talking about the donkeys, the apes that help the humans, and you get shots of these apes next to humans, and there is like, it's almost seamless.
Yeah.
I'm like,
they did a good job of trying to make sure everybody fit into the world perfectly.
It's great. And
I don't know that I want my humans to live in this ape world with them, though, because it provided very sad material.
Yeah, it's...
I don't think I was ever sadder than looking at the dead bodies of Cornelia and
Blue Eyes.
Especially because I fell in love with Blue Eyes in Dawn of Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, I mean, but listen, that's what I kind of appreciate about this film is that it's...
They took a risk.
they took a risk and they don't pull their punches.
No, they don't.
Except for maybe one moment we'll talk about, but I think that they weren't afraid to take a character who we really got to know in the last film and shoot him to death. But yeah. It's a great thing. Caesar is in, you know, he goes through a lot of shit in this film, but it creates such an interesting character for him because, so like in the first film, Caesar is good, but Koba steals the show. Oh, not in the first one, in the second one, excuse me. Koba really steals the show in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And with War, there is, there's Koba, but there isn't a Koba who is constantly there to upstage Caesar. Caesar is the focus. So putting Caesar through the ringer and then letting him kind of go down this darker path, it makes him so much more interesting because it makes him relatable, you know?
You know what's funny is that, like, I'm watching Caesar in this film and I'm reminded of a video game character, Zach, that I think you'd appreciate. I almost feel like he's one Arthur Morgan from Red Dead Redemption 2 in a sense that, like, and I think
I could see that, yeah.
He's just going through the big sad the whole time, you know?
And absolutely, and but man, I just, there's moments, you know, it's when he, it's like when Luca dies, right? And he's finally like they're like, hey, let's cut our losses, let's go back to the rest of the tribe, like this isn't worth it, and he's like, no, I have to have my revenge, the humans need to pay. And I love that Maurice just looks at him, he's like, now you sound like Koba. And that's, going back to the second film, that's why Koba is such a fucking good villain. Because he, everything that he did in the last film informs everything about Caesar's character in this one. He is regretful that he didn't see Koba for the ape that he was. He is... He's basically been traumatized by that because there's a moment when they're talking when Blue Eyes comes back with Rocket and they're like, hey, we found a place beyond the desert and it's great. And Winter kind of snaps and like has a little outburst. And the look on Caesar's face when he like goes to stop Winter is like, I'm going to have to fucking put this guy down.
You know what's interesting is that I'm thinking about it now. Like, there is a parallel that could be drawn between Caesar and the Colonel in this film, right? Because I look at the Colonel and kind of just the things that he would say and just, like, his attitude toward his own beliefs. He's kind of like a straight line. Like, he was never... I never considered him to be, like, a hypocrite or that he would just kind of go against the things that he would say. And that was kind of Caesar in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, right? And so, and until the, you know, everything with Koba happened. And so then I look at him in this film, or like how he looks at somebody like the Colonel and their interactions, right? And I love the Colonel's, like, you know, his summation of Caesar's attitude is just him being too emotional to handle.
So emotional.
Exactly. But like, it is true. Like, Koba was incredibly emotional in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And he had that backing all of his thoughts and everything, just all of his motives. And now that's all that Caesar has and is holding on to. Versus in the past, Caesar was really like, he could make clear decisions, or thought he could at least. But turns out life didn't work like that. And so in the end, I kind of really appreciate how Caesar could just watch the Colonel, I mean, just kill himself. Just because, like, there's a respect there, I feel, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think it's a finally, like you know, we look what we have brought upon ourselves, you know?
I think he does have a deep understanding for this other character. Even though, like, deeper than maybe what we may see, Caesar is a very intelligent animal. You know, emotionally intelligent and just you know, regular, his IQ is off the charts. Am I right?
You know?
And I think that's something I could appreciate about this too. And I really think that it's decisions like these in the story that'll help us kind of infer what we could expect coming up in like the Batman, right? Just because these are also very nuanced characters that we're going over that have a lot of history. Not that, you know, in the Apes, this film, I want to say, at least from what I've heard, I'm not too familiar with the older Apes films, but this film takes a lot from the Apes universe.
So, well, yeah, so this film and the last film borrow some plot elements from Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, I think it is.
Or is it Battle?
Battle, one of them. But okay. yeah, a little bit. I know in the original films, when they do introduce the character of Caesar, he's a very different character than what we get with Andy Serkis, but this film's depiction of Caesar where he's untrusting of humans and he's kind of, he's in it to protect the apes, and he gets to a point when he's like, I don't care how, you know, he guns down humans in this film, with relative indifference, which is crazy when you think about how far he's come from where he was in Dawn, but that just goes to show
the weight of the trauma that he's gone through. Exactly. And what it's done to him.
Exactly, and it, you know, that's just, man, that's what I love to see with characters, is I love to see this, these changes.
You know what's interesting? I come to one of my favorite quotes ever of all time, and I feel like it really fits here, is that apathy is death, Zach. I'm quoting one Darth Treya from the Star Wars Old Republic 2.
You game. Star Wars ho.
But the thing is, like, that's exactly what happens to Caesar, in the sense that, like, you know, his apathy was the death of him, in a sense. You know? Kind of. I mean, also, so was, you know, he got stabbed, but...
I know what you're saying. You know, what I love about this film, though, is that, you know, with Caesar's whole characterization here, is that it reaches that boiling point. And, like, we get the little teases where it's like, right after, what is it that, what is the impetus that he, that we first see, his first appearance, our best boy from the last movie, when Koba comes back in this film, it's the two scenes he has are the, it's so good, because you see how much he's haunting Caesar. That Caesar literally dreams about him, like, ridiculing him. And
he's also name-dropped, like, a good amount in the film. More so than I feel like any other dead character from the last... You go watch Pirates of the Caribbean 2, Barbossa's only in, like, the last, I don't know, a couple seconds of the film, name-dropped once.
But I think that just, it speaks to Koba's character so well that it's like...
He was very imperative to this
yeah, story. He's such an essential character. And then when Caesar is, like, strung up at the fortress and he envisions Koba coming to him and saying, like, you failed. You know, thought you were right and you failed, and now all the apes will die because of you. And it's like this... All the damage that Koba did with what he did in the last film, getting to see that personified as, like, this, like, bloody, you know, kind of gnarled-looking Koba, it's some powerful imagery. I gotta say, I like
kind of like zombie Koba, in a sense.
A little bit.
It's a little scary.
I wanna touch on some of the other characters. Maurice really got to shine in this film. Karen Cannavale just delivered a fantastic performance, hit a lot of great notes. Probably one of my favorite moments is when they find Nova and Maurice brings Nova along. That
blossoming relationship right there.
But when Caesar tells Maurice, like, we can't take her with us, And Marie says, I understand that, but I can't leave her. And it's so good. And of course, he gets some further fun interactions once Bad Ape enters the picture. What do you think about Bad Ape?
I actually really love Bad Ape as a character, and what's his name?
Steve Zahn
as the performer too. There was something about Bad Ape that almost seemed incredibly fitting, and it's because there's no other ape like Bad Ape that has the same kind of comedic timing and just kind of expressions, and just it was the kind of humor that we needed in this film and in this franchise, just because everything has just really relied on the utter sadness that is the lives of both the apes and the humans.
Yeah.
And what they're trying to regain, versus like with Bad Ape, we've regained a sense of like family almost, you know?
Yeah. It's if not for Bad Ape, this would be a very just upsetting, sad film.
Yeah.
He brings a lot of levity. And
Bad Ape is no, you know, he's no first timer when it comes to the drama department, because he said he has his own tragic story behind him.
Family was killed.
Exactly. And he was the only one left, but it's just like his mannerisms, you know, his characterization and everything. It's just, you know, he's a little quirky amongst all the other apes. He's not like any of the other apes we've seen, but
the part when they leave the ski lodge, which by the way, fantastic set. I love the frozen ski lodge, but when he walks out in the parka and the beanie and he just gives a thumbs up. I'm
it's
like,
so great.
This is amazing. What a great character.
But also, like, he's thoughtful, too. He's caring. He wants to provide his jacket to Nova once he's just like, oh, cold.
Right.
It's cold. But there's, like, this experience, like, oh, that's mine. Don't touch that. You know, like, it's just, I just love that he has his own, like, he has his own unique identity versus some of the other apes, I feel like, definitely blend in with each other.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. He also is kind of a fun shift in the paradigm with how the apes communicate, because most of the apes, they sign, and a few select ones are able to speak, whereas Bad Ape can speak, but he doesn't know sign language.
He can't sign, he can't read either.
He can only talk, and which is really funny, because I don't know how he learned to talk, because...
Well, he said he heard it from the humans.
Right, but he's just a zoo ape. He's not like an experimented on ape, so whatever. It's fine. I can forgive it, because he's a fun character. But
you have another gripe that I was reading here that I thought was kind of funny.
Okay, what is it about the horses?
About the horses, yeah.
So I looked it up because the first thing that comes to my mind when I see a silverback gorilla riding a horse, I'm like, can he though? But yeah, that's I did the math, I did the research. Apparently with horses, they apply what's called the 20% rule, which is any horse can comfortably carry 20% of its own weight on its back. I think the heaviest workhorses you'll find in the world are
in this film, Zach, are anything but workhorses.
They're tiny. But I'm just saying, in a perfect world, a workhorse that's like 2,000 pounds should reasonably be able to carry 400 pounds on its back. And I checked, the average weight of a silverback gorilla is anywhere between 300 to 500 pounds. So the answer, it's
a resounding... I hate to break to you, buddy, the average weight of a horse is like 660 pounds.
I said, yeah, I know. I said, like, I'm talking, like, if I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt and say, this is the heaviest horse in the world.
Yeah.
It's 2,000 pounds.
All the heavy horses are just conveniently localized in the Pacific Northwest.
Could the heaviest...
For the monkeys to be riding.
Could the heaviest, strongest horse lift an average weighted gorilla? Maybe. Probably. I'll tell you what it can't do. It can't carry both a gorilla and a chimpanzee.
Yeah.
That's, but, you know, hey, this is,
movies we're talking about.
I'm waiting for, like, Luca to get off the horse, and you can just see its back is just dipping.
Oh, but you know, I didn't even look at the end of this film to see if any horses or monkeys were harmed in the making of this project.
Probably not, because the monkeys weren't real apes. Yeah, you never monkeys.
You never know.
Just in general, that the whole thing with the horses just cracks me up.
I have one thing I almost didn't like. They self-corrected, but it's just like, I don't know how well it was going to fit.
What?
And that's, it's less of like a situation and more of one of the characters being our antagonist, the Colonel.
Mm-hmm.
I found that while the Colonel was this great, I say great relatively speaking.
Finger quotes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he was like this military leader. I really disliked the idea that they were about to put on like a religious zealot kind of cult-like following to him. In the sense that, like, oh, but there's not, it's not, we're not really talking religion in this. It's really just, you know, strategy and just his, like, ideologies and stuff like that. But, yeah, and they course corrected in that sense. But then he used the phrase, like, this is a holy war. And I'm like,
yeah.
You're really bordering some interesting territory with the story you're trying to tell.
I like the idea that he is, like, this, like, I like, you know, the question kind of comes up where they're like, oh, they're going to the border crossing. They're calling for reinforcements. They must be calling for reinforcements to wipe out the apes. And you get there and you find out, oh, no, they're calling for reinforcements. Or they're calling, the army's coming. They're not calling for reinforcements. The army's coming. And you think it's to wipe out the apes. But then you're like, oh, no, they're wiping out the colonel. The colonel is actually acting on his own.
Yeah.
And whoever will follow him against the remaining like military of the United States, and I
love that. I love that spin too.
Yeah,
by the way,
it's great. It adds a whole new layer to everything that we see.
In addition to that, though, like, you know, because in Dawn we also got, you know, the regular human factions. There was another portion that we got. The humans, at some point, when they got the apes, or no, it wasn't the humans. It was the different ape factions. One of them imprisoned the other one, you know, and caged them. But this film decided to take it a step further. And when the humans caged the animals, they put them in just working camps, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Under, like, harsh and, like, very, like, almost real, like incredibly real, like conditions that they were starved, they were tortured in the middle of it. And it's really tough to see some of these things just because, like, these things have existed in the real world, they still exist in some areas, you know. And just watching them kind of unfold, it almost makes you realize how you forget that we're watching a film about apes. You know,
yeah, they're just all characters.
Yeah, there are characters. These are people. You know, for better sense of the word. And it's just as bad. And I hate. Oh, I don't. No, I don't hate. But I really like that they went the extra step to make sure that they built off these things that were already mildly established in the last film.
Right.
Because it's to that point that we were talking. They are not holding their punches. They are kind of going all out with this one. And it left like a lasting impact, an image that you think like Caesar was tortured. You know, we saw these apes. I mean,
whipped.
Not to mention these donkeys. We saw them almost crucified at the beginning, or they were strung up.
Yeah. And what I love about that whole thing is how it turns into this story of like, you know, we thought it was going to be this big revenge quest, and as soon as we get to that fortress, that camp, whatever you want to call it, the whole story flips on its head. And suddenly it's no longer about, like, you know, getting revenge on one person. It's saving all these apes. But I did want to zero in on one particular plot point I love. And it is the point at which Caesar is redeemed when he is at his lowest point. He is like starving, He's dying of thirst. He's been tortured, like you said. And he's in the cage by himself with all the apes across the camp staring at him. And Nova sneaks in. And she is able to bring him water. And she's able to bring him food. And all the apes give their, you know, apes together strong salute. And it's such a moving moment of, like, he finally, he sees the error of his ways. He finally comes back to the side of the, to reasonable thinking. And then it leads into, like, kind of like the fun prison break stuff that goes into the finale of this film. But we get a really nice little plot point of Nova gives him her doll. And it's that doll that goes on to give the Colonel the virus.
That was a really great kind of...
It's such a great way to plant it.
Oof.
Without drawing attention to it.
Yeah.
And it
also, like, I don't think you have to go on and ask the question after the fact, like, oh, so how does this new version of the virus transfer itself and stuff? Yeah, I feel like it's all self-explanatory. Yeah, it's nice and contained. It shouldn't have to warrant any more over-explanation.
In this day and age...
example of show, don't tell.
In this day and age, I don't think anyone's questioning how diseases get
No, but I mean more in the sense of, like, that... like I just said, like, over-explanation, that we didn't need that. Not required. Right. No batteries necessary. Like, this Lego set comes completed as is.
Oh, wow. Where's all the fun in that? No, I'm joking. No. But, this movie, you know, I feel like this movie just completely, it just nails everything it's going for. And when we come to the end, I love that the what was the deciding factor in the apes outliving humanity, or at least the military, is that apes, evolutionarily speaking, are much better climbers than humans. And so when that avalanche came down at the end, they're able to climb up into the trees and avoid it, where all the humans are just smothered.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing. It's like the thing that kept the apes alive and established them as the dominant species was that they were apes, not humans.
You gotta really appreciate their own adaptations and evolution. You know?
Right.
I almost wish I had a tail sometimes. Like, oh, these apes don't have tails.
Listen, I totally understand what you're saying. As someone who grew up on Dragon Ball, I've always wanted a prehensile tail. But I could always see the application of that. And then in what I have dubbed a truly Moses move, Caesar leads his people out of servitude, takes them through the desert and into the promised land before dying as he lays eyes on it.
It was almost like he was going to retire and look back on a grateful universe. Very Thanos-like. Right. I was reminded of Infinity War watching that.
Somewhere between Moses and Thanos.
Yeah, who's to say which one?
But Maurice there at the end, you know, actually, like, fully speaking his lines and stuff. It's interesting because, like, the way it ends, it ends on a hopeful note of, like, hey, the apes are safe. Caesar got his people to safety. But it almost is an uneasy ending, I find, because you go, like, well, what happens now? Like, the apes have won, and it's their world now. And if Disney makes good on their plan to make more of these films that follow in this story, where are we going to pick up? Are we going to pick up 100 years later? Are we going to pick up, like, right after this? The world, as it stands now in this story, is a kind of a scary place.
I... being in a scary place right now as well. I have no idea where to picture this in the future. They are continuing the franchise, aren't they?
That's what Disney has said. They said they're keeping the continuity of this trilogy, and they're building off of it.
Why can't we just have this happy ending and just let them live their AP lives in harmony and peace?
If I had to guess, I'd say we are going to be skipping ahead decades, if not jumping into like a great distance into the future. I wouldn't be surprised if they just try to kind of remake the original in a sense. Maybe not like one-to-one, but retell that story.
Get this, right? What if we take place 30 years in the future?
30.
And it's starring Koba's granddaughter.
Koba's granddaughter.
And it's Koba's granddaughter discovering what it's like to be an ape, and that she needs a mentor, and so she finds Cornelius to train her.
Okay.
And Cornelius is on like an island. Mm. And then the thing is that, you know, Blue Eyes had a bastard son with Lake, and he's the enemy, and they're in charge of the first.
What would you call this bastard son?
I would call him Kylo. No, wait, that's been taken already. I can only
there
imagine.
There wasn't Aldo. Like the original Planet of the Apes, one of those movies, it had an Aldo. They had a. I want to see the origin of Dr. Zaius, but.
You lost me. Marky Mark. I want him in this.
Mark Wahlberg. God, no, please no. But wouldn't you know, that's all the time we have to talk about Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. Tune in next week when we're covering The Departed. No, we're not. Not yet, anyway. We'll find time to cover The Departed.
Zach, this was our final Planet of the Apes. After this film and the last, I feel like I am excited. I would say I'm like less cautiously optimistic and more optimistic for the Batman.
Yeah, I'm stoked.
I keep watching Robert Pattinson interviews where he doesn't necessarily talk about the Batman, but he just talks like, you know, just random interviews with him. Mm-hmm. And how he's decided to take on this role and do all these other things. And I'm just intrigued, and I'm going to leave it at that. I think Matt Reeves will have done a fine job.
One thing Matt Reeves did say in this that I am looking forward to is that he said there are no plans right now to make a second one.
Mm-hmm.
This is a standalone film. And if they get a chance to make a second one, great, and they will do that. But they didn't go into this movie expecting planning for a sequel. They focused on this film. It's going to be its own self-contained story. I kind of like that.
Wasn't that the original Inception with Batman Begins too? Like, Batman Begins was just supposed to be Batman Begins, and then they got, after the fact, they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, now, I will say Batman Begins famously ends with the Joker tease, which doesn't have to mean anything.
They didn't confirm that was actually going to lead into a second film, but I'm trying to remember, this was 2006 or 5, whatever. You know, we'll have to revisit that at a later date.
But yeah, so I'm ready for it. I'm ready to be hurt again, and I think this is going to be this could be Matt Reeves' like magnum opus. We never know.
Well, I feel like he has plenty of room for it, a magnum opus, and his filmography and his career. So let's hope. I didn't put our socials and our website in the beginning of the episode.
It's okay, so we've been frazzled today.
I will just leave it here at the end. Ladies and gentlemen, lovely listeners, please visit our website at ScriptorScreen. That's www.scriptorscreen.com or anchor.fm/ScriptorScreen for all of our past, present, and future episodes. We're on social media at ScriptorScreen, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's all do our part. Let's share as much information in order to help the people of the Ukraine through this tumultuous time. There's resources that we can spread to our friends and family. Donate if you can. You know, nobody should have to go through these atrocities. Zach, I look forward to our next episode, and I hope that we will have much better news to come in the next
couple weeks. Yeah, me too. For all of us here at Scriptor Screen, stay safe, hug your family, tell everyone good, positive statements of affirmation, and we'll be back having seen the Batman, and we'll tell you all about it.
Have a good one.
Bye.